Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
In national news, members of the Justice League of America this afternoon apprehended the last remnants.
Hey, buddy, can I get another one over here?
Sure thing, coming right up.
Will somebody turn that crap off?
You got a problem, pal?
No problem. I just meant, can't you change the channel? It's about time for the game, isn't it?
Oh, hey, he's right. Switch it over to Channel 9, will ya?
Hey, yeah. We don't want to miss the first pitch.
Hope we don't get rained out. It's awful looking out there.
The bartender shrugged and thumbed the remote. The image on the screen flickered, shifting from a close-up of a smiling young man in a crimson mask to a long shot of Wrigley Field.
Huh. Well, you look at that. There's blue skies and sunshine at the ballpark. Still got a rainy sky here, though.
Well, yeah. I guess that's Chicago for you. I mean, the ballpark's clear across town. Gotta be lots of little, what do they call them? Microclimates. Yeah. Oh, and bartender. I'll take another one of these bad boys when you get the chance.
Make that two.
The man at the bar froze. The new voice seemed to come from out of nowhere. He hadn't heard anyone enter the seedy little tavern in nearly an hour, and he flinched as a hand reached out beside him and slapped two 50s down on the bar. It was a large hand with long fingers, the sort of hand that some people would have called elegant.
Actually, make that a round on the house.
Hey, it's the right time to be here. Sure thing, buddy.
The stranger was a big man, well over 6 feet tall, with a shoulder span that a bodybuilder would kill for. The stranger's dark hair fell to his collar in waves, framing his face, just as his neatly trimmed mustache and beard framed a wide smile. Weirdest of all were the stranger's eyes. Their irises were very dark, almost as black as the pupils.
Here you go.
Thanks. To your health.
And yours. Thanks, mister.
Please, call me Adam. I am, after all, my father's firstborn son.
Okay. Adam it is. And I'm Mark.
Oh, I know who you are, Mark. I've been looking for you.
Is that so? You sure you got the right man? It's a pretty common name.
Mark let his right hand drop toward his knee. But just below the surface of the bar, his wrist was suddenly caught in the stranger's hand.
That wouldn't be wise, Mark. I know all about the weapon that you keep strapped to your right leg under your trousers. It was foolish to reach for it. I had heard that you don't need to grasp it in order to draw on your power, but then, with all the alcohol you've consumed this afternoon, controlling that power isn't so easy without direct contact, is it?
Adam relaxed his grasp. And Mark slowly drew his hand back to the top of the bar.
What do you want from me?
Just a little friendly conversation on a proposal that stands to greatly benefit us both.
Benefit, huh? You're right. Oh, and why should I talk to a guy who starts a friendly conversation by trying to break my wrist?
Because you're not an idiot. Had I meant you any real harm, I would already have inflicted it. I could have killed you in any number of ways before you were even aware I was here. But I didn't. Instead, I bought you a drink. Oh, Mark, these last few days you've been spending considerable time and effort dulling your intellect. But you still have a good native wit, and you must be feeling at least a twinge of curiosity. Let's go to a booth. I think we'll have a little more privacy back there.
Mark let himself be pushed toward the shadowy booth, nervous thoughts running through his brain. He'd heard rumors of a crackdown by the DEO, Department of Extra-Normal Operations, but he disregarded them. He wasn't a metahuman or an alien, just a guy who lucked into a great little tool. As they approached the booth, Mark caught a glimpse of his reflection in a bar mirror. A pair of bloodshot eyes stared back at him from around a crack in the glass, and he ran a hand over his stubbly chin. He felt suddenly self-conscious.
Yes, this is much better. To answer the question that's on your mind, I am neither a police officer nor an agent of the federal government. And no, I'm not a telepath either. I don't need to read minds, Mark. I can read people.
Uh-huh. So what do you read in me?
Potential, Mark. Vast, untapped, and unrealized potential.
Huh. I'm empty.
Here, have my beer if you want. You have power. Great power. But it has never had the opportunity to flower. Society and its petty rules have held you back, made you an outlaw in your own land. Just look around us. Should men of power be forced to hide away amid such filth? Should such slovenly places even exist in a truly enlightened society? No, they should not. This tavern, this city, this entire world has become hopelessly corrupted. And it falls on men such as us to set it right.
Us? Set it right?
Yes, Mark. You are not alone. I, too, have been opposed and oppressed by a corrupt, unthinking world. I know how you feel, and there are others like us. We are many. Together, we can make a difference.
Look, I'm not much interested in political movements.
Nor am I. Politics is not a solution, Mark. It is the problem. It takes power from those who most deserve it, squanders the riches we should rightfully possess. Look around you. Is this the sort of life you want to lead, crawling from tavern to tavern?
Hey, why the hell do you care what kind of life I lead?
The more pertinent question is, do you care what kind of life you lead?
Hey, what's the deal, man? You come in here...
Sit down, Mark.
Mark hesitated. The man was as big as a damned house, and Mark's wrist still hurt like hell. His fury had time to turn into shame. He slumped back into the booth.
I don't care.
What was that, Mark? I didn't hear.
I said, I don't know. I don't know if I care anymore.
Mark, I told you before that you possess great potential. I still believe that. So I'll ask you once more, is this really the sort of life you want to lead?
No. No, it isn't.
I didn't think so. Listen to me. A time of great chaos is about to sweep the world. Those who are not prepared, those who are committed to the world as it is, will perish. Those who embrace the new will not just survive, they will reign supreme. I offer you a great opportunity. You can be part of a new world. Or you can crawl deeper into the bottle and numb yourself to the destruction of the old. The choice is yours.
Mark lifted the glass, slowly swirling the drink, and looked at his reflection in the amber liquid of the glass.
Okay, Adam. Tell me more.
Outside, the clouds began to part.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Justice League of America Superman. Written by Roger Stern. Justice League of America, Superman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2008, DC Comics. Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by James Konacek, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Penny, Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Andy Clements, Stephen Carpenter, Bruce Allen Rauscher, Nanette Savard, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Tim Carlin, Michael Replogle, Faith Potts, Lily Beacon, Christopher Graybill, Peter Stray, Ken Jackson, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Susan Linsky, Elizabeth Demery, Michael John Casey, Tess Rowan, Dolores King Williams, and Mort Shelby. The Never-Ending Battle. The big man in the windbreaker and ball cap had been leaning against a concrete security barrier in the heart of Metropolis's Federal Plaza, pretending to read the morning edition of the Daily Planet. But in the shadow of his cap, his eyes kept tracking from building to building, looking for trouble. There wasn't much in the way of foot traffic in the Grand Plaza this morning. 20 feet to the big man's left, a young woman in a business suit stood waiting at a bus stop. 50 feet to his right, a tight crowd of men in dark suits moved down the marble steps of the Hamilton Courthouse to a line of black sedans idling at the curb. Across the street, a man with a pushcart was staking out a spot to peddle hot dogs to a lunch crowd yet to come. And 7 stories above, the barrel of a high-powered rifle suddenly jutted out from the cornice of an adjacent rooftop. The rifle caught the big man's eye a split second before the shot was fired. And then, everyone and everything seemed to freeze in place around him. Everything except for the bullet. It flew on, spinning toward the center of that tight crowd of dark-suited men. The big man knew that the bullet was headed for a short, heavyset figure at the center of that crowd, a human target in a cheap overcoat who looked every bit as rumpled as the old fedora jammed tightly down on his head. The big man sprang into action, putting himself in the way of the bullet. The slug slammed into his broad chest, deforming slightly before ricocheting off at an oblique angle. His left arm shot out, and he caught the slug in his bare hand.
Is everybody okay?
We're okay, Superman. Take care of that gunner.
I'm on it.
What the hell? I had that guy dead to rights.
The hitman started to line up a second shot, but all he could see through the crosshairs of the scope was a ripped-open windbreaker framing a bold, red-and-yellow pentagon emblazoned with a stylized letter S.
Oh, crap.
The hitman had run smack into a tall form that had not been there a second before. He sat staring wide-eyed at the figure he'd run into. The big man was clad mainly in dark blue. Red trunks were secured at his waist by a yellow belt. The red of his trunks was matched by his boots and by the long cape that unfurled in the wind behind him. And there, once again, was the red and yellow pentagon centered in the middle of the broadest chest the gunman had ever seen.
Superman!
The gunman reflexively pulled a handgun.
New in town?
The Man of Steel reached down with one hand, grabbed the man by the front of his jacket, and effortlessly hauled him to his feet. The hitman jammed the gun against Superman's gut.
Better think twice before you pull that trigger, unless you're dead set on saving the state the cost of a trial.
Yeah, guess you're right.
Glad to hear it.
The next instant, the automatic was gone from his hand. He brought his empty palm up to eye level, staring at it stupidly for a moment, before he noticed the gun in Superman's free hand.
Time for us to take a little trip.
No, wait. No.
For a moment, they seemed to hang motionless in midair, all of Metropolis spread out below them. And then they plunged down toward the plaza below, faster than an express elevator. Just as the hitman was about to scream, Superman slowed their descent. And they touched down on the pavement as easily as if they'd hopped one step down off a ladder. Instantly, they were surrounded. A dozen uniformed policemen had joined the dark-suited plainclothesmen, as had the woman in the business suit and the hot dog vendor. All had automatic pistols aimed at the hitman.
He's all yours, gentlemen. And lady. Inspector Turpin, he left his rifle on the roof of the Langley building. I can retrieve it if you'd like.
You've done more than enough for us, Superman. Forensics is already on their way up there.
The hitman looked up in surprise. This man was his intended victim. As he stared in disbelief, the little man straightened up from a slouch, seeming to grow in the process.
The human target now stood nearly 4 inches taller, his weight more evenly distributed over a broad, barrel-chested frame. The heavyset man chucked out of the old overcoat and doffed the rumpled hat, revealing the balding head of Police Inspector Daniel Turpin.
Weren't expected to see my mug under here, were you? Buddy, you are under arrest. Before you begin, I gotta read you this. Glasses.
The inspector set a pair of wire-rimmed half-glasses across his broad nose, seeming to enjoy the discomfort he caused the gunman. Superman had seen the inspector do this particular routine before, deliberately stretching things out to get under the perpetrator's skin. Later, he knew, an interrogator at the station house would empathize with the perp over Turpin's terrible behavior. The routine worked almost every time.
All right. Listen up now. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can...
Wait a minute. You modded this whole operation just to trap me?
Hey, I'm not finished, Quick Draw. I said, you have the right to remain silent. And until I finish reading you your other rights, you're damn well gonna be silent. Got that? Yes? Yes? That's right. Now, as I was saying, anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You had the right to talk to an attorney before answering any questions. You have the right to have your attorney present during questioning. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you without cost, before or during questioning, if you desire. Do you understand these rights?
Yeah, I understand already. I don't believe this. Oh, what is it with you people? Come on, Superman, why were you even here? I'm not a gang boss or some super villain out to take over the world. I'm just an ordinary hitman, a working man. You know, I'm like Joe Sixpack to you.
Joe Sixpack, he says. A working man. Like he services your car instead of planting you 6 feet under.
Sorry to spoil your day, but I don't limit myself to stopping criminal masterminds.
Yeah. Think of this as his contribution to crime prevention.
And you must be old enough to be my grandfather. What the hell are you doing still playing cops and robbers?
You're skating on thin ice, mister. Real thin. O'Shaughnessy!
Inspector.
Get him out of here. And will somebody get me my hat? My real hat.
Is this what you're looking for?
Turpin turned to find Superman holding out a derby.
Yeah, now, that's a hat. I'll trade you.
He gleefully swapped headgear with the Man of Steel, polishing the derby with the back of his sleeve before setting it into place over his thinning hair. Turpin then pulled a cigar from his vest pocket and clenched it between his teeth.
You know, those things will kill you, Inspector.
Oh, now don't you start in on me. My daughter Maisie's on my case all the time. I'm down to just one a month, and I chew them more than I smoke them anymore. See, I haven't even lit the blasted thing.
A good start, Inspector. You take enough risks as it is.
Eh? What's that supposed to mean?
You put your life on the line here today, Inspector.
All part of the job. The feds were expecting an attempt on the life of their star witness in the Intergang case, and the Special Crimes Unit was 85% certain that a hit had been contracted with out-of-town talent. That's why I asked you to help out with my little decoy plan.
You could have let me play the decoy.
A big lug like you? Nuts. You never could have made yourself short enough to look like the Fed star witness. Oh, maybe that Martian buddy of yours could have tamped himself down enough to play the part, or even that plastic man goof. But you? No way. I was the closest in body type to the witness, even though I'm better looking. Besides, this was my plan, my call, and I'd never ask anyone to take a chance I wouldn't take myself.
Too big a chance. If I hadn't spotted the sniper in time...
Yeah, but you did. And anyway, I was ready for him.
If I'd been a second slower, that Kevlar vest wouldn't have done you much good. The shot was aimed straight at your head.
My head?
Straight at it, given the angle of the bullet's trajectory and its velocity. There's no question.
Turpin's face turned sour. He looked again at the half-chewed cigar, and then tossed it into a nearby trash can.
2 points.
Superman grinned and leaned back against a lamppost. He twirled the fedora in one hand and plopped it low over his brow.
Yeah, pretty good. You know, you don't look half bad with that lid. You ever wear a hat?
Not in years, I'm afraid.
Hey, know who you look like?
Who?
Yeah. You look just like Dick Tracy. Yeah, with that wide-brim hat. Just look at that jawline. All you need is a yellow overcoat.
You think so? That's a new one. I hadn't heard that particular comparison before. An artist I know once said I looked like Captain Easy.
Yeah? Oh, yeah, I can see that. But how does a young buck like you even know about Captain Easy? He hasn't been in the funny pages in years. Not around here, at least. He must be a hell of a lot older than you look.
I've always been a fan of the comics, Inspector. So, Tracy, huh? Is my jaw really that square? I've been told I resemble a lot of people, actually. Bond fans usually tell me that I look like Pierce Brosnan or a young Timothy Dalton. My personal favorite was when a woman told me that I look like a young Gregory Peck.
Nice. Very nice. I should be so lucky. Only actor I ever get compared to is Edgar Buchanan.
Buchanan? Didn't he play...
Uncle Joe on Petticoat Junction. Crazy show's still being rerun.
Turpin took another look at Superman in profile.
Gregory Peck, huh? Sure, that works too. Of course, you're at least half a head taller than any of those guys. And a whole lot broader in the shoulder. You know, I still remember the first time I heard a TV comic point out that you and Charlie Sheen had never been seen together. I just about busted her gut laughing. That was years ago, but it's still funny. To me, anyway. You gotta wonder if those other guys think it's funny when they get compared to you. Because you know that happens. Bet you every tall, dark-haired Caucasian male gets told he looks like Superman. You know it's gotta cut both ways.
Not too deeply, I hope. I just hope that the other men take the comparisons as a compliment.
They'd be crazy not to.
Well, thank you, Inspector. But I think you'd better just return this hat to the police supply room. It's not a bad fit, but the style really doesn't go well with the cape.
Turpin reached out for the fedora.
Hey!
Only to have a sudden gust of wind tear it from his hand. Superman's hand shot out, caught the hat, and thrust it back into the inspector's grasp.
Better hold on a little tighter. Wind's picking up.
Yeah, no kidding. Whoa! Hey!
In seconds, the sky darkened, and people around the plaza leaned into the wind. Superman's cape was sent flying straight out from his shoulders.
What in the world is...
And then, just as suddenly as it had blown in, the wind died down to a pleasant breeze. The clouds broke up, and the sun started shining again in a clear blue sky.
Aw, oh, damn it. As if last winter wasn't bad enough, now we gotta put up with this. Blasted weather's been screwy up and down the whole East Coast all month. It's getting so that when I wake up in the morning, I don't know whether to put on sneakers or mucklucks.
Ah, the dazzling uncertainty of it.
Excuse me?
That's how Mark Twain once described the weather in New England. I'd say it applies to Metropolis as well.
Yeah, too bad. Hey, I don't suppose there's anything you could do about that.
Superman stared off into the sky, as if he had suddenly become determined to see to the edge of space. He listened intently for a sound far beyond the range of human hearing.
Superman?
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. What was that?
I was asking if there wasn't anything you could do about the weather.
Sorry, Inspector. Holding back the forces of nature is a bit more difficult than apprehending a hired gun. But now, you'll have to excuse me. There are other matters that need my immediate attention.
Turpin waved his derby as he watched the Man of Steel clear the tall buildings of the plaza.
Say what you want, Superman. But when it comes to battling nature, my money's still on you.
At that moment, halfway around the world, Mark sat in a lotus position in a vast underground chamber, his eyes closed. In the far corners of the room, purple and gold silk tapestries flowed between massive marble columns. Beneath him, a soft woven mat stretched out for several yards in every direction, cushioning him from the smooth marble floor. In front of his outstretched hands lay a slender metal rod, half an inch in diameter and a little over a foot long. It provided a focus through which he channeled his energies. At Adam's behest, Mark had spent more and more time over the past few weeks focusing on the rod, becoming more in tune with his potential for power. He was at the end of just such a session now. Beads of sweat collected on Mark's brow and slowly trickled down the bridge of his nose. Soft, pulsing lights illuminated his face, signaling the end of the test session. In response, Mark opened his eyes. He gazed across the room to a display screen that monitored his vital signs via wireless sensors. His working pulse rate registered at 60 beats per minute, lower than his resting pulse used to be. Mark rose to his feet, taking time to thoroughly stretch each muscle in turn, then bent and scooped up the metal rod. He crossed to the screen, checking his vitals one last time. Satisfied, he touched a finger to the corner of the screen.
Show long-range results. Test 27.
His physical stance vanished from the screen to be replaced by a series of swirling patterns superimposed over an outline of North America. Glowing amber circles on the display illuminated a series of locations stretching along the Atlantic coast from Maine to the Caribbean.
Right on target. Every time. You know, Adam was right. I am a man of vast potential. I think I deserve a little reward. Don't you, Roddy boy? Yeah, I think a nice, relaxing swim is in order. Oh, but first let's put you away. Code 12, hide and seek.
The screen swung away from the wall, revealing a secret compartment.
Better quarters for you too, kid. Beats being shoved up a pant leg, huh?
Mark immediately snapped to attention as curtains parted along the far wall. Adam was entering the chamber. He strode deliberately around a nearby pool, his ochre robes glistening as he walked. Mark had never asked, but he was sure that there were threads of gold filament woven throughout the fabric. As his host approached, Mark brought his palms together in front of his face and bowed deeply from the waist.
Greetings, Sahib Adam. Is that right, or should I have used your official title?
Please rise. There is no need for formalities when we're not in the presence of the others. I trust that your accommodations continue to meet your expectations.
What, are you kidding? I mean, even at the top of my game, I never had a spread this lavish. I never imagined that anything could be so opulent and so exotic at the same time. Just look at this place. It's like Fred Astaire meets Bollywood, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I have screened both Top Hat and Flying Down to Rio, and I'm quite aware of the spectacles produced by India's film industry. Interesting diversions. But we must now clear our minds of all unnecessary distractions, Mark. The time for preliminary testing is over.
You want to jump ahead to a full field operation?
Yes. A rare opportunity has arisen. We must ready ourselves to take advantage of it.
A mechanical armature swung out of a panel, holding a two-piece coverall and matching hood. Both had an outer layer of tightly woven metallic mesh.
Is this...
This is yours. Put it on.
Mark quickly donned the garments. They'd been tailored to fit him like a second skin. He caught his reflection in the burnished metal of the open wall panel and broke into a wide grin.
Oh, nice. Green always was my best color.
This is no time to indulge in base personal vanities. It is both wasteful and unbecoming, Mark.
Forgive me. What is our plan of attack?
Look here.
Adam led Mark back to the display screen and pressed his palm to its surface.
Save and store test results. Show parameters for full field attack. New coordinates 4 Alpha 9.
At Adam's command, the glowing amber circles winked out along the eastern seaboard, and a new circle, a much bigger circle, pulsing red, appeared far to the north and west. Mark checked the new coordinates on display.
Wow. What this calls for is big. Bigger than anything I've ever tried before. I'm not sure I'm ready for a workout like that.
Oh, I am. Absolutely. With every test, you have doubled and redoubled my original belief in you, Mark. This will be a true challenge to your new prowess, but I have every confidence that you can meet it.
You do, huh? Well, you haven't been wrong yet. Okay, let's do it.
Excellent. Come with me. We must begin immediately. To do otherwise would be an affront to the gods themselves.
Thank you.
Flying high above the city streets, Superman reached into the secret compartment of his belt buckle and retrieved a tiny transceiver that he slipped into his right ear.
Superman here. I heard the emergency signal. Do you read me? What's the situation?
Loud and clear, Superman. This is Watchtower.
22,300 miles above the Earth, Dr. Raymond Palmer, the physicist, better known as the Atom, sat in the communications bay of the Justice League's orbital headquarters, checking monitor readings.
The National Seismic Institute has confirmed a major earthquake, 6.7 on the Richter. The epicenter is about 5 kilometers due southeast of Wasilla, Alaska, and we're getting reports of heavy damage in and around Anchorage. Sounds like a job for Superman, if not the whole league.
I agree. Who's on call, Adam?
Besides yourself, the monitor board is showing John, Wonder Woman, and the Flash, all available. The Batman is on a private mission in Butron, and Green Lantern is on vacation, apparently somewhere in the Caribbean. I haven't yet gotten a fix on its location.
Understood. Have the first three meet me in Anchorage. And keep trying to find Lantern. I don't know that we'll need him, but...
Better to have him and not need him than need him and not have him.
Right. I'll report in as soon as I arrive on site. Superman out.
The Man of Steel continued on west over the mighty river, accelerating as he flew. He was no more than a red and blue streak by the time he shot past the Nouveau Riche suburbs of Park Ridge. As soon as he was a safe distance from the city, he really took flight. He immediately broke the sound barrier and rocketed up to 10,000 feet, then 20,000, then 30. He continued his northwesterly ascent of the Allegheny Mountains. Within moments, the sky darkened, and all of the Great Lakes lay spread out beneath him. Superman left the Earth's atmosphere behind as he passed over the Great Canadian Shield. Miles above Saskatchewan's Reindeer Lake, he reached the apogee of his suborbital flight and began the ballistic dive that would carry him to Anchorage. Below and ahead of him, he could see the Gulf of Alaska and the Aleutian Islands reaching out toward the Bering Sea. It was down there, in the middle of the Katmai National Park and Preserve, that Superman had first met the Justice League. Hard to believe that was over a decade ago now. In a way, he had been the inspiration for them all. Superman had been the first of a new generation of champions. His first public appearance in Metropolis seemed to trigger a new wave of costumed mystery men and women. Before a year had passed, a group of new young adventurers had joined together to form the Justice League of America. But early on, their careers had very nearly been snuffed out. Clark Kent had been at his desk at the Daily Planet when he first heard the bad news. Lois Lane was crossing the city room when a strange item on the newswire caught her attention.
I don't believe this, but there it is.
There what is, Lois?
Just a few weeks ago, I would have said that the Justice League was a good idea. Flash, Green Lantern, Aquaman, Black Canary, even that green-skinned Manhunter. They've saved the whole world a couple of times over already. They're getting almost as much media coverage as Superman.
I doubt that Superman minds very much. In fact, I guess he thinks that's just fine.
Well, he won't think it's fine that they're fighting one another.
What? What are you talking about?
A bush pilot claims he caught a glimpse of them going at it. Real knockdown, drag-out fight. Says he'd have stuck around to get some pictures, but he was low on fuel. Fortunately, he radioed it in. True or false, it's in the system now. It's news.
Where is this happening?
Alaska, someplace called the Valley of 10,000 Smokes. And don't you even think about grabbing this story, Kent. It's all mine. Kent?
But Clark Kent was no longer there. The reporter was already out of the city room and 5 flights up the building's back stairway. Kent shot up the stairs, not bothering to even hit the floor as he went up, doffing his glasses and shucking off his street clothes as he ran. When he emerged on the rooftop, he was clothed in the brilliant primary colors of Superman. He launched himself skyward, heading for Alaska, praying all the while that he would arrive in time. As Superman neared the Aleutians, he spotted a strange series of flashing lights emanating from the Katmai Preserve. Following the lights into the remote valley, he saw immediately that the bizarre report was true. The 5 founding members of the Justice League were fighting among themselves, without rhyme or reason. The Flash was a crimson blur, darting in and out among the others, ducking under the Black Canary's kick, throwing a punch at Aquaman, trying to tackle Green Lantern to the ground. The Canary turned and bombarded the Manhunter with an ultrasonic cry that knocked him out of the air. With each attack, every strike seemingly came at random, but more and more the blows were hitting home. The 5 were rapidly wearing themselves down and becoming more desperate in their actions. To Superman, it seemed as though they were determined to kill one another. And then he spotted the robot.
You saved us all that day.
What the? John, is that you?
Yes, my apologies. I should have first announced my presence.
A translucent form appeared alongside the Man of Steel, rapidly becoming more opaque. In another instant, John Jones, the manhunter from Mars, was fully visible, his blue cape rippling about his shoulders as he flew. The manhunter assumed his Justice League persona, a lightly humanized version of his true alien form. As such, he was a tall, green-skinned humanoid male. John's scalp was completely bald. His body, in fact, was totally devoid of hair. His features were strong, his face rough-hewn, with a prominent brow that even an amateur caricaturist could easily capture. He was not generally someone who was mistaken for Superman. Yet both men were extraterrestrials, and of all the members of the Justice League, it was the Manhunter whose powers and abilities came closest to rivaling those of the Man of Steel. Both were superhumanly strong and tough. Both could fly. And both possessed powers of vision and hearing that reached far beyond the normal human range. Their differences were interesting as well. Working with a telepath, especially a telepath who could become invisible and otherwise alter his appearance, was never dull, to say the least. The Martian tipped the Kryptonian a small salute.
I assure you, I did not mean to eavesdrop. It was more that your surface thoughts were difficult to ignore. I meant no offense.
None taken. I guess that to someone with your talents, I was thinking out loud.
Indeed. In this part of the world, it would be difficult to avoid thinking about that day. My own memories of that battle are as vivid as my recollections of the 1964 earthquake.
You were here for that?
Yes, I aided in that rescue effort, working undercover, of course, as I always did in those days. No one then ever saw me as I appear now, and I seldom imagined that anyone ever would. Your public debut changed everything. The JLA came together soon after, and in the League, I could be myself. The friendships we forged meant a great deal to me. I still miss Barry and Hal.
So do I.
Both Martian and Kryptonian slowed their flight as they neared the outskirts of the earthquake zone, scanning the terrain more closely. It was the Man of Steel who first picked up the subsonic rumble.
I hope you're ready to put your earthquake experience to good use. Adam?
I'm here, Superman.
John and I are about 10 miles east of Anchorage, and we're about to get busy.
Just a few hundred feet below, a 3-mile-long stretch of highway suddenly split right up the middle. What had been a 2-lane road was now nearly 4 lanes wide, but that new middle lane was a yawning chasm. At least a dozen cars and trucks skidded and slid about the broken asphalt surface.
Let's go!
Superman and the Manhunter split up, darting back and forth from vehicle to vehicle, checking on drivers and passengers, looking for those most in need of immediate assistance. The Man of Steel paused in midair and peered in at the driver of a rusty old sedan.
Are you all right, ma'am?
I think so. Are you Superman?
Yes, ma'am.
Then I'm okay. Yeah, I'm definitely okay.
The Manhunter reached out telepathically to calm the frazzled driver of the late model pickup truck that had slammed into a guardrail. Then he carefully pried open the crumpled cab and helped her out from behind the vehicle's deflated airbag.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Most of the people along the road had merely been shaken by the suddenness of the event. Many were getting out of their cars and starting to help one another. For them, all that was needed was a word or two of reassurance. For others, more immediate action was called for. Superman found a gray-haired man slumped over the wheel of an SUV. The vehicle's frame sat on jagged pavement, its front tire sticking out over the chasm. The Man of Steel quickly reached under the SUV. Superman set the car down and looked at its driver. For an instant, Superman was shaken. It wasn't just the pallor of the older man's face. Between the line of the driver's jaw and his wire-rimmed glasses, he bore a distinct resemblance to Superman's father. The Man of Steel gently tapped the older man on the shoulder.
Sir, can you hear me? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Take it easy, sir.
What happened?
There was an aftershock, and I found you passed out. Do you have any medical conditions?
Well, a spell of heart trouble now and then. Nothing too serious.
The driver managed a rueful smile that made him look even more like Jonathan Kent.
They tell me I'm supposed to avoid stress,
Need any help? I'm a nurse and an EMT.
Absolutely. I found this man passed out. He says he has heart trouble.
Heart trouble, huh? Let me just check you out, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
I called 911. They said that more help is already on the way.
Good. We may need to medevac this man. Any other injuries, John?
A few bumps and bruises, but no broken bones.
Phew. And we got off lucky. You know, I can still remember the big one back in 64. I was just little then, and it knocked me right off my feet. It scared the bejesus out of me. This one didn't seem so spooky, probably, because I was on the road. It just seemed like things got bumpier all the... Oh, my God! Here comes another one!
About 50 yards away, the driver of a big gasoline tanker had just been stepping from the cab when this aftershock hit. The asphalt crumbled beneath his feet, and he grabbed hold of the door for support. Now he was hanging from that door as it swung out over the widening chasm, and he was losing his grip.
Help me!
John, take care of things here.
Superman streaked toward the tanker, even as the trucker started to let go. The Man of Steel grabbed the man, slowing his fall, and threw him back up into the light of day.
It's okay, sir. I have you now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, sir. Oh, no. No! No!
The entire tanker, carrying thousands of gallons of fuel, was tumbling into the chasm. Superman set down the trucker by the side of the road and streaked back down into the chasm. He reached for the tanker, hoping not to crush the thing as he grabbed it. But even as he reached out to stop the falling tanker, a slender, glowing cord suddenly shot down from above, wrapping around the big rig and bringing it to a stop, less than a foot from the Man of Steel's palms. And then, the tanker slowly began to reverse its course. Smiling, Superman rose up from the chasm and landed next to the bewildered trucker.
What was that? What's going on?
We both just got a helping hand from an angel.
As the Man of Steel landed beside him, the trucker gaped in amazement. A thin golden rope had pulled his tanker out of the chasm. In fact, the big rig now hung suspended several feet off the ground, its massive bulk perfectly balanced in cocoon-like loops of the lasso. The rest of the glistening cable stretched another 25 feet into the air to where the early morning light shimmered off the wings of an exotic, semi-transparent jet aircraft. The plane hovered in the air, and astride one of the plane's wings, tightly gripping the other end of the lasso, stood a dark-haired woman of breathtaking beauty. Crimson boots trimmed in white shod her feet. Her legs were bare, as were her arms and shoulders, but if she felt the chill of the morning air, it didn't show. She was clad in blue trunks, spangled with white stars. A broad golden belt encircled her waist. She wore a crimson breastplate, boldly emblazoned with stylized golden wings. Gleaming silver bracelets encircled her wrists, reaching halfway up her powerful forearms. And across her forehead, framed by a cascade of raven hair, sat a golden tiara accented by a single crimson star.
Did you say angel? Okay, that's no angel. She must be a goddess.
She gets that a lot. And you're closer to the truth than you realize. That's Diana of Themyscira. But most people call her Wonder Woman.
Overhead, the amazing robot plane slowly backed away from the chasm, carrying the tanker with it. The Man of Steel raised one arm and a wave to the Amazon princess. She smiled and removed one hand from her lasso, returning his gesture.
I don't believe it. That rig's carrying a full load. She's holding up 10,000 gallons of gas with one hand. That's not possible.
That's not easy, but it can be done, obviously.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I guess you'd know better than anybody.
The man stood and gaped as Wonder Woman lowered the big rig gently back down onto the side of the road.
Oh, okay, she's braced against that plane. But look how she kept it balanced, and all with just that one rope. How is that possible?
I'd say it's magic, of a sort. Diana once told me that her rope was a gift of the gods, forged from the golden girdle of Gia. And I don't think she'd make that up.
With a flip of the Amazon's wrist, the lasso disengaged itself from the truck and began rolling back up along its length, forming a compact coil in her hand. Fastening the coil to her belt, Wonder Woman leapt from the wing of her plane to join her colleagues on the ground.
Thank you, ma'am. I still can't hardly believe it, but you saved my rig.
You're welcome. But Superman had already saved your life. He or the Manhunter could have caught the tanker easily.
Yes, but your quick thinking ensured that it would still be roadworthy, Diana. It should be safe to drive, sir. Just take it easy.
Sure thing. Thank you, both of you.
He tipped his cap to Wonder Woman one last time and sidled back toward the tanker's cab. Other drivers clustered by the side of the road, some whispering into cell phones, but all keeping a respectful distance as the Manhunter joined Superman and Wonder Woman.
Well done, Diana. A most timely assist.
Thank you, John. What's the situation here?
Under control in the immediate area. One mild cardiac case, stabilized. Everyone else is shaken and uneasy, but they are adjusting. That was good planning, bringing your plane.
I was in Madagascar when I received the Adams call. I may be blessed with the speed of Hermes, but the plane was my faster option. It enabled me to make a suborbital flight and arrive in time to do some good.
It certainly came in handy here. But speaking of the speed of Hermes, where in blazes is the Flash?
He's not with you. I would have thought that he'd be the first to arrive.
And you'd be right, Wonder Woman.
The three turned to see a sleek figure in a scarlet bodysuit, crouching by the edge of the chasm. The Flash got to his feet, shaking his head.
Man, when I passed through along this stretch earlier, it was still intact. I guess an aftershock did this?
At least two. The initial quake obviously weakened the substrata beneath the roadbed, and when the aftershock hit...
Instant Canyon. Gotcha. Anyway, I've been all over, around, and through Anchorage for about the last 15 minutes, helping with rescue efforts as I found it. Heard about your arrival here thanks to a 911 call. Oh, and if you tune your JLA transceivers to setting 71A, you can monitor Anchorage emergency dispatch. We've got buildings down, land shifts of several feet up and down in places. But the locals tell me it could have been a lot worse. The quake hit just before 6 in the morning local time, so most people were still at home.
Sounds as though there's plenty to keep us all busy.
What I said. Could have been worse, but things still aren't great. You're the current team leader, big guy. You want to divvy us up?
Superman nodded and set his transceiver to send.
Justice League Priority 1. This is Superman calling Anchorage Emergency Dispatch. The League is here and ready to help. I see. Absolutely, will do. Anything else we can... All right. Wonder Woman, you take the east side. John, I think your talents are most needed along the northern perimeter. Flash, you're our foot patrol. And I'll head for the trouble spots near the port district. Everyone, keep in touch.
Of course. Will do.
The Flash braced himself. Within moments, he was a scarlet blur streaking north along the old Seward Highway, his yellow boots barely skimming the pavement. As he ran, his transceiver crackled in his ear cups.
Anchorage emergency dispatch to all cars. We have a 911 call from inside a house collapsed at 1257 Hague Road, 2 miles west of the old Seward Highway.
Hague Road. Didn't I pass a sign for that about 8 miles back? Yeah, I did.
He found Hague Road and reached the house in seconds.
Anchorage dispatch, this is the Flash, JLA priority code 5. I'm on the scene, but... collapsed isn't exactly the right word for this place.
Dispatch to Flash. Explain, please.
Well, from the looks of things, this used to be a two-story house. But the ground at the center of the lot has dropped maybe 12 to 15 feet. Both ends of the structure have risen up and sort of folded around the middle. Everything looks crumpled. Are you sure that someone is still alive in there?
Roger that, Flash. A man and a woman are trapped in the interior. They're still on the line with one of our 911 operators. He's trying to keep them calm. You require backup?
An EMT wouldn't hurt. Tell the folks inside that help has arrived.
The Flash circled the lot, looking for an access into the broken dwelling. There were no longer signs of any doors. The glass and the few visible windows had all shattered. The frames flattened into long, narrow parallelograms. This was more of a job for the Atom. Ray Palmer would be able to shrink to the size of a fly and make his way inside no problem. On the back end of the wreckage, the Flash finally spotted a shattered skylight large enough for a normal-sized man to pass through.
Dispatch, I found an opening. I'm going in.
Received. They're expecting you, and an EMT is on the way.
The Flash pulled himself onto the ruined structure, gingerly testing each footstep to make sure nothing shifted under him.
Careful now.
He got down on hands and knees, crawling the last few feet. The pace was maddening for a man used to moving at the speed of sound, but it couldn't be helped. Reaching the skylight, the Flash dropped down into what had once been a second-floor bathroom. The toilet lay on its side, and water from a broken pipe was jetting out into a hallway. He reached down to shut off the water.
Of course the valve breaks. That would have been too convenient.
Leaving the bathroom behind, the Flash slid down warped and buckled surfaces that had once been walls as he picked his way through the darkened house.
Hello? Can anybody hear me?
Hey! Somebody help me!
I hear you! Hang on! I'm coming!
The voice had come from above him. He found a path up the extremely tilted floor and came to an oddly angled door frame. The frame had held, though a jumble of fallen timbers and smashed furniture blocked it. Still, there was some light filtering out, and through the debris, the Flash could just make out a man and a woman. They sat huddled together on the now mostly horizontal wall of what looked to have been their bedroom, clutching a cell phone between them. They were both dressed in flannel pajamas, and they were liberally powdered with plaster dust. The Flash grabbed hold of the doorframe and pressed against the blockage.
Won't budge. Have to do something about that.
Hello in there!
Yes, we're in here!
Please get us out of here! Please!
Don't worry, I'm working on that. Are you able to move around in there?
Yes, it's not easy. The ceiling's a little low, but we're not pinned down by anything.
Neither of us is hurt. We just can't get out. It took us forever just to find the phone.
Okay, listen carefully. I want you both to get as far back from this doorway as you can. And pull that mattress over on top of you. Can you do that?
Sure, but why?
Just do it. Things are gonna get a little noisy in here.
As soon as he was certain the couple were safely behind the mattress, the Flash became a soft blur. Turning his superhuman speed inward, he increased the vibratory rate of his body's molecules and reached out, slipping a hand through the atoms of the timbers, blocking his path. Then, the Flash dove through the solid matter of the debris. As he passed into the room, residual energy was transferred to the jumble, exciting the molecular vibrations of the wood. The Flash maintained his increased internal vibrations until the dust and debris had settled. Then he slid across the room toward the bunched-up mattress.
It's all clear. You can come out now.
Two heads poked out from behind the mattress. The couple stared at him wide-eyed. In the dim light that filtered down, through a fissure high up on the floor.
Hi, folks. I'm from the Justice League, and I'm here to help. You can call me Flash.
Hello, Mr. Flash. I'm Al McKinney. Real glad to see you, buddy. This is my wife, Brenda. We woke up to everything shaking. Shook us right out of bed. And then one end of the room started sinking.
This morning has been like a nightmare. I fell into the closet and the door slammed shut on me.
Shh. It's okay. I got you out, dear. Everything's so turned around.
It's gonna be all right. Now that I know the way, I should have you out of here in two ticks.
Take her first.
Okay. You ready, man?
I suppose so.
Now hold on.
Okay.
The next thing Brenda knew, she and the Flash were outside, and he was setting her down on level ground.
Wait here just a sec, Miss McKinney.
Before she could blink again, he returned with her husband.
I'll be right back.
Babe! I'm so glad you're all right.
I was so scared.
We're just so lucky that Flash was here. Hey, where is he?
Here's some blankets and clothing. Also two bottles of water. I found them in what was left of your kitchen. I'm afraid there wasn't much else of use in there.
Al turned back and got his first good look at the remains of their house.
Great God Almighty. I can't believe we lived through that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Flash. Thank you so much.
You saved our hides, buddy. I don't know how we'll ever repay you.
Hey, it's what I do. I'm not in this for the money. But the thanks are always appreciated. Oh, and here comes the rescue van. Yo! Over here! I know you said you were both okay, but I'd still let these people check you over. It never hurts to get a professional opinion, and they'll help find you a place to stay.
The Flash stiffened, looking far off in the distance.
But now you have to excuse me. More calls to answer.
And then, he was gone. From the cockpit of her translucent plane, Wonder Woman could clearly see a plume of black smoke rising from the industrial park far below. She sent the plane into a steep power dive, plunging to within a few hundred feet of the burning building. And then, in response to the Amazon's thoughts, her plane braked to a gentle stop and hung motionless in midair. Wonder Woman popped the canopy and flew free from her plane. Her mouth set in a grim line, she dove toward a cluster of fire engines below.
Captain, we got company. High-powered couple.
What's that? Huh? Well, I'll be damned.
For your sake, I hope not. You wouldn't really like Hades. Too many fires.
Yes, ma'am, no doubt. I'm Captain Gleason. sorry for the language, Wonder Woman. Dispatch said you were on your way here, but you still took me by surprise.
No apologies necessary, Captain. How may I help you?
All right, well, here's what we've got. The quake severed gas lines and electric service in the rear of the building, setting off an explosion and fire that has spread through the south wing. The gas company shut off that line, but now the fire is feeding on the plastics that were manufactured there, releasing some nasty toxics.
Was anyone inside when this started?
Three security guards. Two got out. I have a couple of men looking for the third now. Michaels! Where are Smith and Fullerton?
They worked their way up to the third floor, Captain. Still no sign of...
Before he could finish, a huge gout of flame had blasted out through the glass of a third-story window.
Michaels, we need help! We're cut off from the main stairs, and the other end's blocked!
Hold on! You're breaking up!
I hope we can get some help here! Send somebody in, and this guy ain't gonna make it!
Captain Gleason, we're cut off. Fires engulfed the main stairs, and the other end's blocked.
Wonder Woman pulled Michaels over to the blueprints.
Show me where they are.
There.
I'll get them.
Gleason thrust a mask and air tank into her hands.
Take this.
Right.
Diana slung the tank over her shoulders and pulled the mask down over her face, tucking her hair up under its straps.
And one more thing.
Yes?
Good luck.
Thank you, Captain.
She then leapt into the air, straight for the blown-out window.
A Hera.
Flames licked their way across floors and up the walls. Thick black smoke poured out of several doorways. Wonder Woman drew her lasso from her belt, looped it, and set it to spinning overhead. The glowing coil began to disperse the smoke, even as it cast a soft light into the blackened corridors, and Diana saw signs of movement two rooms away. A firefighter was down, half fallen through a section of flooring that had given way beneath him. The only thing keeping him from disappearing through the floor was his partner, who held onto him by the wrists, and he was desperately trying to haul him up.
Don't let me fall, Smitty! The fire is underneath me! I can feel the heat through my boots! Don't let me fall!
I'm trying!
What? Hello, Mr. Fullerton.
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman was hovering in the air, holding the firefighter without any apparent strain. She rose back up to eye level, and both men looked amazed as the Amazon thrust a length of her glowing lasso into their hands.
Hold on to this and follow me to safety.
Smith and Fullerton were too shocked to ask questions. Each man wrapped the lasso around his wrist and silently fell in behind her, following her glowing cord through the inky smoke. Out in the corridor, the fire raged even more wildly than before. A fiery timber rumbled down from the floor above.
This way!
That's a dead end! We can't get out that way!
Yes, we can. Come on.
Wonder Woman led them down the hall and into a small storage room. Smith pulled out his flashlight, playing its light across bare brick walls. There wasn't a single window to be seen. Diana ran a hand along the wall.
About a foot thick.
I told you, there's no exit!
There will be.
Sunlight shone through a hole roughly 16 inches in diameter and 4 feet off the floor. Wonder Woman stood in the threshold of the newly formed exit, waving the firefighters closer. Smith's eyes went wide behind his plexiglass mask.
Guess I was wrong. Still a pretty good drop. Can we climb down your magic rope or wait for a ladder?
I have a faster way. Hang on.
In the blink of an eye, she gently touched ground, handing Smith and Fullerton off to a team of paramedics.
I'll be right back.
Then she turned and disappeared back into the building. Behind the line of firefighters, Captain Gleason paced back and forth, shaking his head in dismay. Now and again, he stopped to stare at the burning building as his crew sprayed water and flame-retardant foam into its interior.
What the hell?
Why did she go back? It's a furnace in there. What was she thinking?
Captain, there she is!
Wonder Woman flew free of the fire. In her arms, she cradled the missing security guard, her air mask now strapped to his face. The fire crews stared in awe as she landed beside an ambulance and lowered the injured man gently onto a stretcher. Diana waited pensively while paramedics worked on the guard. One of the medtechs finally looked up and nodded, a smile on his face.
Still there. He's a lucky man.
As they started to lift the stretcher, the injured man reached out to Wonder Woman. She took his hand and walked alongside as the paramedics moved him to the ambulance. Just before they loaded him in the van, the guard raised his head, looked to those around him, and gave a shaky thumbs up.
We can't thank you enough, Wonder Woman.
No problem at all.
100 yards from the main runway of Elmendorf Air Force Base, a huge hangar had split in two. Half of the structure was still standing, virtually untouched, while the other half lay flattened on the ground. Colonel Mark Hollister had been rousted out of bed by the quake and now found himself standing on the back of a large flatbed truck directing base rescue and recovery.
Colonel, Chief Master Sergeant Lopez reporting as ordered, sir.
Hollister returned the salute of the young enlisted man who had just climbed aboard.
At ease, Sergeant. We've no time for ceremony this morning. Now, what's the damage report?
Not as bad as it could have been, sir. A number of fences are down. We have teams working on that now, but the perimeter is secured. Two taxiways have been shut down temporarily, and we'll need extensive regrading and reconstruction. The runways all came through the big shake and the aftershocks virtually untouched. That hangar right there is our biggest loss.
Too big. We still have four people missing?
Yes, sir. Three airmen and a staff sergeant. It's believed that they... that they were in the hangar when it came down. We have a canine search and rescue team on the job, but there's nothing so far, sir.
Hollister nodded. At the moment, there was no indication of whether the people trapped under the collapsed hangar were alive or dead. He wanted to believe that they were alive. He looked at the cranes and other heavy equipment that sat ready just a few yards away.
But until we know exactly where they are, trying to move the wreckage could only make matters worse. We have to find them soon.
I share your concern, Colonel.
Madre de Dios!
Put that away, Sergeant. I was expecting this man. He's with the Justice League.
But, sir, he's green.
That's right, and I'm black, and you're white Hispanic. Do you have a problem with any of that, Sergeant?
No, sir. I apologize for my reaction, sir. It was uncalled for.
Acknowledged and accepted, Sergeant.
We could definitely use your help, Manhunter.
That is why I am here, Colonel.
Sergeant Mike Watkins was peripherally aware that a couple of newcomers were arriving at the search and rescue site, but he paid them little attention. They were sensibly approaching from downwind, and they weren't doing anything that might screw up the search. Everything else about them was irrelevant. The sergeant's dog, a big black and tan German Shepherd, was zigzagging across a broad swath of rubble, brisk and sure-footed. Neo never dawdled, but today he was searching even more energetically than usual. Watkins could see that the dog was picking up on his own nervous energy. There was always that extra edge of intensity when the missing people were your own. Neo's ears picked up, and his tail started wagging furiously. He zigzagged more and more sharply, clearly zeroing in on something. The dog abruptly sat and started scratching at a pile of debris.
You find something, Neo? Good boy, Neo. That's a good boy. Oh, we're gonna need the heavy equipment.
The sergeant did a double take as he finally caught sight of the manhunter. He blinked again, then broke into a broad grin.
Maybe we won't. Neo, hold. That's a good boy. We just got some major league help.
Colonel Hollister trotted to keep up as the manhunter, his right hand extended, strode over to Watkins.
My name is Jones. I helped with the last Tokyo quake.
The sergeant shook the Martian's hand.
Watkins, I heard about Tokyo. You do good work. Sight's all yours.
Manhunter stared closely at the debris, slowly turning his head to the left, then tracking back and slowly turning to the right. Watkins translated for his colonel.
Scents percolate out along gaps in the debris, and Neo homed in on the strongest source of the scent. Now, Jones is like Superman. He can see right through this stuff. Starting from where Neo alerted, he's tracing those gaps back until he sees where and how our people are trapped.
Where and how, Sergeant? You're not worried about if?
No, sir. Neo is almost always right.
And he is right again today. I can see a woman and three men, alive. Two appear seriously injured. All are unconscious. They are trapped together within a small airspace beneath a fallen beam. Colonel, have your medical team stand by and wait for my signal.
What do you intend to do?
Oh. To the colonel's surprise, the color began to fade from John's skin and clothing.
Manhunter?
I am going to do the heavy lifting, of course.
The now translucent Martian turned away and began to sink into the rubble. Neo, who had been watching the Manhunter with professional interest, backed up a step. The dog stared at the disappearing figure, then looked up at his handler.
Don't look at me, buddy. I have no idea how he does that. But he's one of us, one of the good guys. That's all that matters.
Lowering his density, the Manhunter passed like a wraith through the rubble and down into the small air pocket where the enlisted personnel lay trapped. Carefully, he passed between the unconscious people. And then, crouching over them protectively, John re-solidified. The space was very tight, forcing him to stand hunched over. Making sure his feet were properly set, the Martian wedged his shoulders under the beam. Then, he began to straighten. A huge section of steel-reinforced concrete lifted up out of the rubble. Centered under the elevated slab, the Manhunter stood tall, his arms outstretched like the limbs of some mighty green tree. For a moment, the waiting rescue team just stared at the Martian in utter astonishment.
Here! Bring your stretchers this way!
Careful with the airman to my right and the one directly in front of me. First has a broken left shoulder and collarbone. The second has a shattered right knee.
As they knelt in the Manhunter's shadow, one of the Air Force medics looked up at him uncertainly.
Not to worry. I will not let it drop. But please hurry. There could be further aftershocks.
Scant minutes later, Colonel Hollister picked up a bullhorn.
Everyone is safe and clear, Manhunter. Hang in there. We're moving in a crane to lift the weight off you.
Not necessary, Colonel. Ugh.
The big concrete slab came crashing down. The rescue team stood shocked, staring at the cloud of dust that billowed up from the rubble. Then, before their eyes, a ghost seemed to rise up out of the dust, changing from white to gray to green.
All right! That's some trick!
Whoa, that really is something, buddy.
The Manhunter strode back to the waiting Serpent rescue team.
Sergeant, may I praise your dog as well?
You have done this before. Sure, go ahead. And thanks for asking me first.
He is a working dog. One should always ask.
John crouched down and smiled at the shepherd.
Good boy, Neo. Good job. You did your job well, and all were saved.
A great clamor arose behind the Manhunter, and he stood to see a squad of airmen surging toward him. Every man and woman suddenly wanted to touch the green-skinned stranger, to shake his hand, to clap him on the back. Unaccustomed to such an outpouring, the Martian quietly acknowledged their thanks. On the edge of the crowd, Colonel Hollister stood beaming. Catching the Manhunter's eye, he snapped off a smart salute. Watkins gave a thumbs up as he led Neo away. John returned the salute and the thumbs up. He reached out to shake yet another outstretched hand, and his smile widened.
This must be what it is like for Superman all the time.